The Business on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Electric Ireland. Our business is understanding yours.
Good morning. Coming up, the boisterous Brennan Brothers, a Fermanagh business that's flying high and selling to the champagne set. Later in the show, we're also going to be looking at the phenomenon of unusual job titles that seem to be taking over the corporate world. For instance, this week, Apple advertised a position for a thought leader, whatever that is. But of course, there are plenty of other odd titles knocking around, like AOL's Digital Prophet or Microsoft's Innovation Sherpa. But if you've come across any ridiculous or oddly appropriate job titles, please let us know. Our favourite suggestion will win a great prize of a two-night stay and dinner for two in the wonderfully atmospheric and beautiful Rathmullen House Hotel on the shores of Lough Swilly in County Donegal. To enter or to contact us about anything else on the show, text 51551, phone 1850 715150, email thebusiness@rte.ie or tweet to @thebusinessrte. But first, this morning we're joined from Galway by a man who has a new job title. This week, Alan Ahern was appointed as an external advisor to the IMF. That's the same International Monetary Fund that we're all so familiar with here in Ireland at this stage. He's also head of economics at NUI Galway, and in a former role as Brian Lenehan's special advisor, he had, I suppose, a front row seat while Ireland struggled to survive in the wake of the banking collapse. Alan, you're very welcome to the programme. What is the new job with the IMF?
Well, every few years the IMF does some soul searching. It looks at how it's been performing and thinks strategically about what it should be doing in the years ahead. And in that exercise, it brings in a number of external advisors, external experts, to give them some advice. And in particular, they have asked me and some other external advisors to look at the advice they've been giving in terms of structural reforms. We know the IMF is deeply involved in giving advice on budgetary policy and on policy to do with monetary policy on financial issues. But it also gives, at times, advice on issues to do with how efficient the economy is functioning, and are there parts of an economy that are not functioning particularly well, for example, labour markets or some aspects of product markets. That's what we refer to as structural issues.
That's where you really get into the nitty-gritty as well when the IMF goes into a place. I mean, does it need to do a lot of soul searching? I know it had a reputation years ago for being particularly tough. But it was tough here, but maybe not as tough as our European partners.
Well, tough. I mean, most of that reputation comes from the conditions it sets in programs to do with budgetary policy. So it wants governments to put their public finances in order, and therefore governments have to engage in austerity. But this is different. This is to do with looking at parts of the economy and seeing are they functioning as well as they should be. For example, in Ireland, part of the program was looking at legal costs. That's a structural issue, and seeing whether is there anything to be done to reduce legal costs. I'll be focusing not so much on programs, but on the regular surveillance that the IMF does. The IMF gives advice to about 180 countries. It doesn't have that many programs, but every year it does a report. It sends a team to the country and does a report on how that economy is performing. And it's wondering, should it be involved in giving advice on structural issues at all, or should it leave that to the OECD or the World Bank? And if it is going to be involved, in what areas should it be involved?
Well, it certainly was giving advice last week in relation to this €2 billion adjustment that is expected in the budget, although it now looks as if it might not happen. The IMF view is we really should stick with the original plan and do a €2 billion adjustment in the budget. We've had 6 years of austerity. That's very tough medicine, isn't it?
It is extremely tough medicine. Of course, you have to remember what happened to the public finances in 2007. A third of all the revenue that the government took in was coming from the property bubble. And so once the property bubble burst, that revenue disappeared. The government had commitments made in terms of public sector pay and social benefits and expenditure on health and education. And so a huge budget deficit was created. create it. It wasn't a temporary budget deficit, in that it wasn't a budget deficit that would go away when the economy recovered. This was a structural or a permanent budget deficit that had to be reduced through fiscal consolidation. That's what we've seen over the last 6 years. I guess the good news is that the deficit has come down a lot, and it doesn't appear to be much more adjustment needed, indeed.
Well, is $2 billion needed? Would you agree with the IMF, or do you think that's what it will end up being?
I think that there's an economic sense to doing the two billion. The problem is whether it's politically doable. I mean, you can write down a list of measures that add up to 2 billion, but that's not a budget. It's only a budget if it gets through Dáil Éireann, and that's where the politics comes into it. And my guess is that 2 billion is not politically doable. At least that's the way it seems from listening to the mood music in political circles and in the newspapers. So the question to ask is, would we as a country be better off having a smaller adjustment, let's say adjustment of 1 billion, or a general election? And if that's the choice we face, then I think we'd be better off going for the smaller 1 billion adjustment, because I think a general election would be extremely disruptive.
Lesser of the two uncertainties or bad news. But will it be a political mistake or an economic mistake to not do it?
Well, again, I mean, if there is a general election, if the political system cannot do it, then we'd have a general election, and then presumably lots of parties would run on a campaign that is the end of fiscal adjustment, and so there'll be no adjustment done. So the government should do as much of the 2 billion as it can handle politically. But the political reality is, I think, that it's not going to be able to do the 2 full billion.
Well, the banking inquiry finally had their first meeting during the week, and it's something I want to ask you about in a moment, but it is inevitably going to look at things like the state bank guarantee that was brought in when Brian Lenihan was Minister for Finance. You went in as an advisor to Brian Lenihan after the guarantee. I think it was in January 2009. What was that like?
I went in a little later than that, March 2009. Right. I mean, things were getting very bad at the time, in the sense that the Irish economy was contracting at a terrible rate. I think there was about 8,000 jobs being lost per week at that stage. Borrowing costs were beginning to rise. The bank's funding position was in terrible trouble.
What was the atmosphere in the department, Alan? Was there a sense of panic?
And I wouldn't say panic, but people were extremely busy, and people knew that this was an unprecedented situation. But I mean, it was like an accident in an emergency ward. The economy, the banking system had arrived in after a terrible crash and was in critical state, and the surgeons had to work on it. And that's the analogy I would use. People were extremely busy. There was something new happening, some bad news coming every day. And there was a huge amount of work to be done, but people got around doing their work.
What was it like working with Brian Lenihan?
I mean, I thought he was a super minister for finance. He was the right man in the right place at that time. He was the doctor on duty when the Irish economy and its banking system arrived into the A&E, and he was a super leader of the surgical team. And you know, he used to use the phrase a lot, "Let's get on with it." And while there was non-stop debate and commentary about which policy to follow, he thought through the different policy options, but when he had decided which was the best, he was determined just to get on with that.
The question of his legacy is already being debated and will be into the future. I mean, the state guarantee was a massive mistake. Would you agree?
Well, there's a bank inquiry is going to look into that, so it'll be interesting to see what evidence they come out with. I mean, whether the banking guarantee was a mistake or not, that is debated and debatable. That there are some people who have very strong opinions and then say yes, it was a disaster and it led to a huge cost.
Well, it cost us $60 billion.
Actually, in a way, it costs less than that. In a way, it costs more than that because of the $60 billion. Some of that has come back already. Money has come back from the Bank of Ireland, for example, which has reduced that cost. And some of it will presumably in time come back from AIB. So the cost in terms of recapitalising the bank will turn out on net to be less than that. But on the other hand, the cost of the banking crisis is much more than that, because we have all the unemployment and the immigration and the economic shock. So the 60 64 billion number is used all the time, but it's the way it's simplistic. But on the guarantee, I mean, there was a book recently by Donald Donovan and Antoine Murphy that say that they looked into this and they came out with the conclusion that it was the best of it was the best of the bad options available.
Whatever about the guarantee, one of the reasons why it ended up being so costly was that bondholders were not burned. What was it like inside the department? And did you have discussions with Brian Lenihan at that time? Did he seriously weigh up going against the ECB and burning bondholders at any stage?
The reason bondholders weren't burnt is firstly they were covered by the guarantee, but of course the guarantee was only a 2-year guarantee, so it expired at the end of September.
And at
that stage the bonds then become unguaranteed. So for example, there was about 4 billion of unguaranteed bonds in Anglo, and he did want to put losses onto those bonds, but the ECB was against that. Big part of the discussion is one of the really controversial issues in the negotiations of the programme in November, and Brian Lenihan did make a very big effort to try to include burning those bondholders.
And did he openly talk about the resistance to that from the ECB in the department at meetings?
I mean, I think people in the department knew about it, so they knew what was going on. So he did discuss it, and he discussed it obviously with the Troika and some members of the Troika. I think it's well known that the IMF staff also wanted to put losses onto bondholders. They had that in mind for quite a while. I remember going to Washington, Brian Lenihan, in early October, and we met some IMF staff, we had a discussion about that 4 billion in particular of Anglo bonds that was now burnable. And so, yes, there was a determination to put losses onto those. But at the end, the ECB was against it. And therefore, the Troika, I remember two members of the Troika are European, and the European Commission tended to take its lead on banking issues from the ECB. So two of the three of the Troika were against it. And therefore, the Troika on whole was against that.
How did you get on with Brian Lenihan? Did you become friends?
I think so. I mean, I was very fond of him. I'd get regularly sort of weekend calls from him with his latest thinking on something. We'd have fascinating discussions. But even outside that, he was a fascinating guy to talk about all sorts of issues.
Do you feel protective of his legacy when people criticise his performance?
Well, I'm not unbiased. I mean, there's no point asking me for a non-biased view of him. I can't possibly give that. Others perhaps can give that. But I try to, as best I can, take a rational look at what happened over the last few years. I think there's lots of simple narratives about it, and that stuff I think should be challenged. But,
well, some of it will, I think, in the banking inquiry. We'll probably get a variety of views expressed. Do you think the inquiry, as it now finally sets off, is worth doing? Do you think it'll be a fruitful exercise?
I think so. I mean, it to the extent it can be unpolitical, the less politics in it, the better. And whether an inquiry that's run by politicians can be non-political, I'm not really sure. But I think there are things that can be looked at. The inquiry should look at the guarantee and the other options that were available. I think something that would be very useful would be to look at some case studies as part of a module in that. That is, there are lots of projects that were done around the country where fields were bought and they were developed at huge cost with huge borrowings. Houses were built. Those houses weren't sold, or maybe they were sold, but there was massive losses made by the banks on those particular developments, and that those losses ended up in the national debt. And I think if you had a food scare, it sort of had some poison got into the food system, what you would do is you would start with the food product, move back into the shop that sold it, go back to the distributor, all all the way back to the factory that produced that food and right back to the farm. I think
you trace everything back.
I think that's what they should do with a sample of five or ten particular projects. Go all the way back to where there was a field. Who was it that thought that said let's build some houses there? And who were the different actors that were engaged right up to the time the houses were sold or didn't sell? Well, I think that would shed some light.
Plenty of toxic material in the process, I'd have to say, along the way. Hopefully they'll take your advice and they may actually look at that. Alan O'Haron of NUI Galway and advisor to the IMF, thanks very much for joining us on the programme. Coming up, the Brennan Brothers, a Fermanagh business where life's a breeze, and learning lessons in the luxury market.
The Business on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Electric Ireland, Ireland's leading business electricity provider.